Hey, before we start this episode, just want to remind you that the Fearless Woman's Guide to Starting a Business is available everywhere that you like to buy books, and you can get it in paperback, Kindle, and even as an audiobook. I'll have links on where you can purchase in the podcast notes. Okay, back onto the show.
You are listening to One Broken Mom, a podcast dedicated to raising awareness about mental health, parenting, and self-improvement. I'm the host, Ami Quirconi. One Broken Mom is not a family show. It is intended for adults only and may contain adult language. Sometimes the topics are serious, but you can count on the episodes to be entertaining. Also, One Broken Mom is not offering any psychiatric or medical diagnosis. We're just here giving away useful and important information. So, if you're ready to hear real talk by real people so that we can all get better together, then you're in the right place, and welcome.
All right, everybody, welcome back to One Broken Mom. Today I have with me Dr. Lulu, and she is a teen suicide prevention advocate and recently just added TEDx speaker to her resume. So I want to say congratulations to you for that. We have been chatting with each other online and through social media for over a year. We have been able to hook up until now. And as we were talking before the recording started here, you know, the universe kind of pulls the schedule together when it's supposed to come together. And so this seemed like the best time. But how has it been for you to actually do the TEDx thing? Because that literally just happened this weekend.
Yes. So it's been amazing. Like I like to say, A-H-M-A-Y-Z-E-E-N. Amazing. I love it. I was born to talk anyway. Ironically, I used to get in trouble when I was young for talking. Oh, be quiet. Oh, you're going to go to the principal's office and all that. Now I get paid to talk. So, honey.
Yeah.
Way to do it, right? So I'm excited. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
It's taken literally a year and 1 month or under a year to just even get to where we are able to now finally talk on the phone and pull this thing off. So yes, let's go.
Awesome. Well, now, before we jump into the questions, what was your TEDx talk about?
Oh, the title was Why Our Children Kill Themselves. And then in parentheses, the capital N-O-T in red. Everything else was white, but not what you think. Mm-hmm. Not what you think. Yes. So
awesome.
Yeah. Well, our kids kill themselves, but not what you think.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So this is going to be a good conversation then today, because that mm-hmm. is something that this will be published during September, which is Suicide Prevention Awareness Month. Mm-hmm. Teen suicide is something that we have had conversations in my own household with it. I have a child that actually experiences and has suicidal thoughts. So it's something that is very near and dear to home. It's something I know that like makes me, you know, when the conversations happen and in our own house, I mean, my stomach just drops out. Like, I mean, they're tough to have. Now you have this amazing goal, which is to end teen suicide by 2025. How did you come to making that and setting that up as your passion for yourself?
I honestly randomly just picked the date. I think everyone who becomes an entrepreneur, who wants to go after a goal, first of all, you doubt yourself. You almost doubt the hell out of yourself, right? You almost don't even do it because you're like, oh, can I do it? Can I do it? So I said, let me put it as far back as 5 years. Let me just go for 5 years so I can get enough people to know about it and then start talking about it in 2020. That'll give me 5 years. But also, I think I saw it somewhere that there's some bigger organization that is also looking at 2025 or something. That number came from somewhere. I don't remember where. It wasn't just divine, but I also thought 5 years is always a good round figure, right? And I'm thinking in 5 years, I should be on the United Nations stage, which I did that already this year. And then TEDx stage, which I already did this year. So I'm like, okay, maybe I should regroup. But there's no special reason. I just picked 2025. I just thought it was 5 years from this year. And it should do. Actually, it was 7 years from 2 years ago, which is when I first quit my job. But I hadn't thought about it then. But this year, I was like, yeah, 2025 will be good. So that's the reason.
Are you personally connected with teen suicide, or is this something that came about as your practice working with families?
A little bit of both-ish. My first patient suicide was a teenager, and that was in 2008. He came to see me with his mother. She was concerned that he was no longer interested in playing football, and he was a quarterback. She was like, checking for drugs. I was like, okay. But then his drug test, of course, was negative, but his PHQ-9, which is this is a modified screen for depression, came back 23 out of 27. So I said, Mom, you know, he said yes. He answered yes to these two questions, which are like the most critical. Have you had thoughts of hurting yourself in like in the last year and then in the last week, something like that? And she was like, oh, just depression? I was like, yeah, it's not quite just. She was like, well, if it's depression, then he's going to be fine. I had depression. I did okay. My mother had depression. Everybody in my family had depression and we all did okay. That was March of 2008. 4th of July, 2008. So 4 months later, in front of the family during their barbecue, during their 4th of July barbecue, he put a double barrel shotgun in his mouth in the front lawn. Wow. Pull the trigger.
Oh my
first
gosh.
Contact. Yeah, very, very fast, very quick, and very effective. Okay. So needless to say, on so many levels, we could discuss just that story. Mm-hmm. The fact that he did come. I mean, she did think of it enough to bring him. He was honest enough to tell me. But the barrier there is she didn't believe it. Most parents don't believe it. And right now, this week and this month, my biggest thing that I'm doing is trying to promote one of my quotes from my TEDx talk, which is a suicide attempt is never a cry for attention. It is always a cry for help. And if you want to call it a cry for attention, then great. What attention do you need to be giving to your child? If you're calling it attention, let's go there, right? Mm-hmm. So it's yes, and then it's no. And then my own son, who is queer, I have to remind myself that he's a they, them, they are they, them. When they were in middle school, they were outed before they were ready. And there I was thinking, oh, I was doing a great job being a mom. And then they were like, I had this, because they were a guest on my podcast. And that's how I knew that little window there was a bit suicidal that minute, because they were outed before they were ready, bullying, somebody. So that's the funny thing. And I know one of your questions later on is about the etiological factors of suicide. It's so multifaceted, but on my TEDx talk, the one word I use is betrayal. Well, first of all, trauma. But betrayal is what leads to the trauma. Because if a child is being bullied or cyberbullied by their friends in school, or they get into a breakup with their boyfriend or girlfriend or whatever, somebody stole their boyfriend, something, whenever things that teens go through, or they're being molested serially by their priests or their uncle or their brother, because these are all patients that I've had. Something is going on, emotionally neglected. Parents are going through a divorce. You know, there's alcoholism in the family, so the child is exposed to these things that kids should not be exposed to. Any combination of trauma that a child has been exposed to is trauma to the child, both vicariously because their mom is the victim of domestic abuse, or or transgenerationally because they are Black and their mother was a victim of abuse when she was 8 or 12 or 14 or 19. Now she's a traumatized mom. And she's trying to raise this child wholly, which is not possible because she's broken, right? Mm-hmm. Or anyhow you can toss in trauma into the salad, the child is betrayed. Because when the child was born, they weighed 6 to 8 pounds at the most. And they were happy-go-lucky. They did not want to kill themselves. Between that baby in the crib to the 17-year-old who's cutting, or the 15-year-old who is anorexic, or the 14-year-old who joins a gang, or the 12-year-old who decides, you know, I'm going to run away. Whatever. All of those kids translate to something happened between birth. But we are very quick in America or wherever else to hold on to something. We want to find something, anything but what's in the mirror. And so we call it mental illness, or we call it depression, or we call it whatever we want to call it in a child. I've been an adult who is suicidal. I'm talking about a child, okay? 9.5 times out of 10, they're not depressed. Case in point, on Wednesday last week, I had a thing I was presenting to the juvenile justice here in San Antonio with, I don't know, nearly 100 kids and the judge and another friend of mine. And I tossed that question out at the beginning. And the adults all wrote depression, depression. The kids all wrote breakup, family, bullying. All the kids knew it. But all the adults, why do adults say depression? Because it's easy. It's a low-hanging fruit. Every single third or fourth commercial on TV is an antidepressant. That doesn't mean I'm depressed. Listen, if I'm not depressed, an antidepressant will not prevent me from killing myself. And this is a quote that I'm putting on my t-shirt because it's not going to happen. You can call it what you like. It doesn't change what it is. These kids are constantly being traumatized. If a child becomes addicted to drugs, it's not the addiction you're treating, it's why did the child become addicted? What happened to that child? And so we need to change our focus. We need to, when it comes to kids, but I can almost boldly say, even when we come to adults, most people who kill themselves are not mentally ill. If you want to take the phrase mental illness independently of what everything else around us, schizophrenia or anxiety or bipolar disorder, yes, they might have symptoms of depression and maybe even overwhelmness. But if you put it in the backdrop of lack of support, stigma, shame, guilt, Christianity, religion, parents that don't get it, yes, the person will kill themselves. But there's a reason why majority of people who have mental illness are alive today. They're thriving. They're taking their medicines. They are supported. They're fine. Catastrophe is what makes people kill themselves. Something triggered that otherwise smooth sailing situation that you had. My 7-year-old patient was the reason I quit my job to start speaking about suicide. He attempted suicide twice.
At seven?
At seven. The youngest child that died by suicide in the world was 5. So a 7-year-old is almost old. Okay. Yeah. In America, it's 2 6-year-old girls, a white girl and a black girl, unrelated. Okay. So the 7-year-old was triggered by his uncle, his mother's newest beau, said something derogatory about his father, who was not present. Adults are triggers for kids. And that's why today's tip of the day is, parents, what's your role in your child's suicide? Mm-hmm. We have to accept our own responsibility. That a child's trigger is usually within a 100 to 200 square footage from where they're standing. Mm-hmm. Someone is triggering them off, whether it's a bully at the, you know, in the bus or on the playground or the teacher or the police, you know, or racism. Something is triggering that child who was happy at birth. Mm-hmm. That is my argument. So it's mental anguish and despair, overwhelmness, loneliness, isolation, what I like to call iso-freaking-lation, lack of valley-freaking-dation, the children feel invisible, unheard. These are the problems, baby. It's not, you can call it any mental health you like. If you want to, you can keep going. Here's my argument. In the last several years in the United States, prescription strength antidepressant use has nearly quadrupled. In that time, suicide rates have continued to soar. So unless there's something wrong with my map, there's something wrong with that picture. And so you can pick the low-hanging fruit all you want and put everybody in the world on antidepressants. Suicide rates are going up because we've got the wrong diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And in this case, like any medical condition, if you have the wrong diagnosis, you're going to have the wrong treatment. You're going to be backing up the wrong tree all day, every day.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Whew, I'm going to take a deep breath right there. It is. No, it is. And like I said, the parts of this, you know, my kids came to live with me a couple of years ago. I wasn't the custodial parent after the divorce. This is a story that a lot of people that follow One Broken Mom actually know. Their dad and I separated, it was a better choice for him to be the custodial parent and for me to, I needed to spin off for another 7 years and continue going downhill before I came back up. But the one of the kind of catalysts for the change in the dynamic was not only myself wanting to have my kids back in my life on a more frequent basis, but the fact that, you know, one of my kids was starting to cut and have depression and suicidal thoughts, and dad was having some difficulties understanding what to do with that. And when I brought my kids into my house and then had that realization that I was repeating history as a broken mom. You know, these were choices and decisions I was making that was self-sabotaging me professionally, romantically, and also with my kids. You know, I took in a deep breath and a whole lot of accountability. But it sucks. I mean, you know, to sit there and to sit here and go, okay, I've got a child struggling here. And part of that is my fault. You know, like she's here because of the sum of everything that came to her through her life that she had no choice in and no decision in or anything like that. And it's a tough thing to deal with. You know, what you're saying here, I sit there and go, man, it makes me feel really uncomfortable because it's true.
But we have to sit, we have to learn to sit in the discomfort and tarry a while, because your discomfort compares nothing to the child. And I'm not trying of course, I know you know what I'm saying. I'm talking to you, not as Amy, but you as whoever is out there. Your discomfort, because, oh my goodness, you might even take responsibility for your role in it, doesn't compare to the child who didn't ask to be born, had no business in anything that is happening to them, yet they're key players. So I say, tarry a while in your discomfort. Let it sting for a minute. I have been suicidal. You say, I know what I'm talking about. So it's not because my life was easy-go-lucky, no. And you hear the passion in my voice because I've walked this talk. And I'm not just like some random doctor, no. And when I went live, is that the word, with my struggles with suicidal ideation, everybody and their mamas were like, oh my God, you're a doctor. Don't say that. I said, no, I'll stand in my truth all day. So yes, I'm a doctor. There's a reason why doctors are the number one people that die by suicide in all white collar jobs in America, because they're not allowed to speak about it. Well, I'm not going to be that. You can take my license if that's what makes your day better. But I'm not less of a doctor because I spoke out of my struggles. Why are you allowed? Why can Amy talk about your own struggle? Why can the truck driver talk about his struggle, or the taxi driver, or the painter, or the mechanic, or the engineer, but the doctor cannot talk about their own struggles? Well, there's something wrong with that picture. And just this past weekend, another pediatrician just killed himself past weekend. So this is not something that I'm talking from losing dozens of friends who are doctors to suicide. Somebody has to talk about it. You know, at one point you must be okay with getting into good trouble. And that's what, rest his soul, Congressman John Lewis said, be okay with getting into good trouble. Yes, it's good trouble because I'm getting the word out there. People need to know the reality. You can cover it all you want with cherries and buttermilk and sauce. Underneath is rotten. And that's what it is. So going back to your child, you've already named four things, which is on the ACEs. And I don't know if you know what ACEs is, adverse childhood experiences. Parental divorce tops it. The children usually feel responsible for their parents' divorce. Whether you explain it to them all you want, they still feel like maybe something they did. It's just what kids do. Mm-hmm. It's just what they do. You can tell them all you want. It's just what they do. The second thing you talked about is, and I don't know about yours, but the fact that you needed your own time, quote unquote, 6 years, 7 years, whatever, to find yourself, which is true. Put on your mask first, esperidad. Mm-hmm. Pero in the meantime, we've got a minor here who doesn't have 7 years to give you, right? Because that's 7 years of his life without you, which is not good or bad. It's just what it is. Okay. I'm just listing them. So that's trauma again for him or her, whatever. And then the child starts cutting. Mm-hmm. A child that is cutting is a very complex situation because they know that it hurts. They know it's not good, but they need to feel something. Oh, I'm just going to do this to help me feel something, which may or may not end in suicide. But it's already a broken child, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's epigenetics, which is transgenerational trauma, which is the gift that you give to your child because you're broken, because you're not whole yourself from birth. So if a mother is being abused, if a mother was abused, if a mother, you know, is an abuser, all those people are broken people, they will give to their child this gift for free at birth. So you see what I mean by your child scored 4 out of 10, and anything more than 4 has a around 50% chance of suicide. You see what I'm talking about right now? Mm-hmm. Yep. So it's not as simple as, oh, you know, we're going, you know what I mean? Like, how do you fix it? I don't know the answers, but we're working on it by telling people about it, what to look for. Mm-hmm. Praise God, you did something about, you know, yours, but not everyone is that lucky. And then, you know, this keeps happening in the meantime. Most parents will tell their child, what do you mean? What do you mean you're depressed? How could you do that? You know, blaming them, judging them, a child that comes to you, no wonder the kids shut down. So I'm not going to say anything. And then they kill themselves. So it's very, very dangerous mm-hmm. to see a child that is suicidal, even if they voice it as a joke. 13 times, you listen to them 14 times. Because I don't know any kid that is born sad and depressed and wanting to kill themselves. Something happened. We have to be very careful how we react, things we say, because they might say, oh, I heard mom say something about LGBT people. Da, da, da. Maybe they're struggling with that identity. They're not going to tell you. And then what do they do? They start cutting. Mm-hmm. LGBTQ youth, particularly trans youth, have the highest rate of suicide among all youth. There's a reason for that. Because the society that it takes to raise and save them tosses the Bible at them, calls them, you know, incomplete, calls them all kinds of names. And then the child is like, you know what, I'm going to run away from home. And then they become victims of the streets, which is a whole nother discussion. Peer mm-hmm. pressure. We didn't talk about peer pressure, but peer pressure in the sense that there's a phenomenon called suicide contagion, mm-hmm. whereby a child, an adolescent who is at risk, they have to be at risk of suicide. If their friend or someone they know, or if suicide is publicized overly, they can attempt suicide because it's been publicized and they're able to see it too much. So we have to be cautious around kids who are suicidal, who have attempted suicide or things like that. But also to mention that studies have shown that formerly suicidal teens who can identify one single trusted adult in their lives will thrive. And that's where you come in, to be the one for that at-risk youth around you. Like literally they need one. And so the disappointment is that as bad as teen suicide is, that means these kids cannot find one. Mm-hmm. So you see that, you know, there's a way to look at it that way.
Yeah, no, and that's actually, that matters a lot in a child's developing life, that it may be a parent or may not be a parent.
It doesn't have to be a parent, exactly. A lot of people will tell you, Oprah talks about her second grade teacher in kindergarten or something, mm-hmm. right? People talk about their coach, their neighbor. People talk about the person that, for me, was my chemistry teacher in high school. So it's just whoever, you know, that person you identify with that said to you, I see you, child. I want to help. What can I do? That's the person. So we need people. We need you all to be that person for that child. You know the child. Mm-hmm. You know the child. So you see how these are all complicated. You know, it's a convoluted. It's not easy. This is the one thing that makes your child know. Because each situation, I must peel the layers. The kids are products of their environment. Mm-hmm. And I can give the child all the medicine I want. If the environment is still toxic, it doesn't change anything. Mm-hmm. It just gives them side effects or overdose. Because I'm keep increasing the dose, or we keep changing the class of antidepressant. Let's try this one. This one works best. No. So it's not quite as easy as that. Mm-hmm. But as far as I'm concerned, I want people to just know that this is a thing. It's not a joke. Like, suicide is second leading cause of death for kids aged 10 through 34.
Yep, I had that in my notes. Yeah.
Second only to accidents.
Right.
Here's a catch. How many of those accidents were suicides?
Right.
How do you know? They're dead. In my podcast, My guests tell me that each attempt was made to look like an accident. So how do you know that accident that ended up in the death of the person was not a suicide attempt? Mm-hmm. You don't know.
Right.
You don't know. So, and as of this year, the WHO's predictions for this year was 1 every 20 seconds. So how long have we been talking? How many people have died by suicide in that time? Mm-hmm. So it's a bigger problem. And we're going all up in arms about COVID-19, for good reason. But COVID-19 doesn't kill someone every 20 seconds. suicide does. But you don't see people saying, oh my God, let's go to arms for suicide. Until it happens to them, then they're all about it.
Right.
So that's the problem that I'm having. So you see why I quit my job to look into this further, because somebody has to. It's too serious. We're talking about the next generation of kids not being whole, of leaders, of adults in the world. It's a very dangerous, potentially dangerous problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think we're already seeing, you know, the trends are startling, you know, adults, right? I mean, go back 30 years to our teenage years, you know, you and me were close in age to each other. And when you see people our age now actually are the largest demographic of suicides, that's concerning. And that's the way I approach all this is, you know, my kids are going to grow up into an adult. And even if we manage to get through their teenage years unscathed, air quotes around that, I haven't promised them anything if they don't have the tools and resources when they become older. You know?
You can say that again for those at the back. Tools and resources is critical, not medication and not judgment. Empathy and compassion, not medication and not judgment. Tools and resources is key. The world we're leading for our kids, I don't know that it's nurturing. It's just not. It's full of trauma and brokenness, and it becomes a vicious cycle. So yeah, I completely agree with you. The fundamental result of the ACEs study was what you're speaking about right now. They surveyed 17,000 adults to find out their exposure to childhood trauma when they were children. And then they fast-forwarded and found out that people who indeed had been exposed to trauma as children now today are dying by suicide and are, you know, having mental health challenges, which is what I like to say, not mental illness, mental health challenges. Resiliency issues, coping skills are lacking because when they were young, they were broken. So it's not benign at all. And you're right, it goes through life with you. But now the ages are getting, they're getting younger. So we're not waiting to adult age anymore. My children, I did their ACEs score. I think each boy had 4. Why? Because their parents are divorced. Their mother was a victim of domestic abuse, so that's vicarious trauma for my kids, right? Their mother herself was sexually molested as a child, and I've been suicidal. All of those things are my kids. And then they haven't had a chance to get their own trauma as Black men in America, which is 3 points on its own, you know?
Right.
All the other 7, just give it to racism. So it's not as simple as just, you know, business as usual, or, you know, it's Labor Day weekend. No, this is life and death for a lot of people, enough people. And with the COVID pandemic, people losing jobs, an increase in domestic abuse and domestic violence, suicide quadrupled is even, maybe might be octupled. I don't know what that word is, because most suicides are not reported. Remember, we don't really know how many for sure. That's how big the problem is.
Yep.
And so suicide is bigger than mental illness. It is huge. It's not a mental illness problem. Mm-hmm. It's a life catastrophic situational problem.
Yeah.
Mental illness is only one of the 19 etiological factors for suicide per the WHO. One of 19.
Yeah. It's like the canary in the coal mine, to be honest with you. I mean, that's what it is. Suicide reflects the canary in the coal mine. When that number starts going up, it means you have to start looking at all the bigger things that are going on in there, you know?
Almost should be the other way around. We should be looking at it before the canary starts singing.
Right.
Because when the canary sings means that we already have a buildup of toxicity. So we should, when she's, you know, because, and I think that's a very good example, because that study is flawed fundamentally. Before the canary sings, they're distressed. We miss the signs when they're distressed because they're a bird. We can't go in and, you know what I mean? But if there was somebody that was kept to just watch, you will see the signs. By the time your child starts cutting, the problem is already there. Because they might not cut the one that you can work with. They might do a big laceration and they're going to go see God before you get to them. My neighbor's son across the street a few weeks ago killed himself. with a gun in the house while his mother was in the house. She thought he went to work. This is too serious. And I will say this because I can. And as a pediatrician, I must. If a child is suicidal, the next step up is having access to the means. Mm-hmm. And whether you like it or not, you can keep your gun if you like. Don't say, Dr. Lulu, the doctor with the funny Nigerian accent told you to get rid of your gun. Don't get rid of your gun, but do know that your child is most likely to have a fatal accident from said gun 8 times before my child who doesn't have a gun in the house. That's not to say that there are no other sources of killing themselves, because, you know, most kids, we use a gun, 58% of the kids we use a gun, but some of them use a jump rope, some use a scarf, some use their belt. So, you know, so what we want to do is avoid them ever getting to the point where they are thinking this seriously and have a plan. Mm-hmm. That is the thing. Because in the end, gun or no gun, people have knives in their kitchen. So, you know, it's not as easy as just get rid of all the guns. I like that because studies have shown that 58% is more than half.
Right. They say the means do matter. You know,
it means it matters. It matters. Yep. And, you know, once upon a time, we had no seatbelt laws. We know what happened when we put the laws in. We can measure it. So it's not like we're just saying stuff. States who have guns in their homes record up to 8 times more fatalities from the people in the house. And when you ask them, oh, I have my gun for protection against me outside. Your kid is busy killing themselves when you go to, and you can't really hide your gun from your kid. They'll find it. Mm. Or they get their friend zone whose parents left their gun available. So it's like, if everybody is like wearing a mask for COVID-19, if we can all just wear our masks, if everybody just really doesn't have the gun that is going to be like major fatality. I mean, I don't know the numbers, but there are very few gunshots to the head that don't end up in death. Yeah, there can't be many. Mm-hmm. So suffice it to say that if you don't have a gun, you are saving, the life you're saving is probably your child's life.
Right. Statistically speaking, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned one of the things that I actually did want to talk with you about, because we are recording this episode in 2020, and, you know, you have 2 black sons, and I know that connected with you on social media that you have been going through, you know, some things. I mean, honestly, your whole life has been going through things in there. But I want to make sure there's a, for the viewers there, there's a beautiful picture of her and her family. She got 3? Or, mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. So I want to use this opportunity for you to be able to say again what we need to know, because for the viewers, I'm white. For the listeners, I'm white. What do we need to keep hearing about what it's like to be a mother with Black sons in this country? And because when we talk about suicide, you've mentioned racism, we've mentioned bullying. And that is also that thing that kind of gets swept under the rug when we talk about, you know, the global impacts of suicide prevention and, you know, destruction and violence against ourselves. You know, racism's in there and it's a part of it. You have the pulpit right now. Tell me what it is.
So I literally wrote a whole book about it. Like, mm-hmm. It doesn't get any better than that, right?
Yeah.
So racism is part of it. I had an alphabetical way to remember it. Child abuse, no, wait, bullying, then child abuse, then domestic violence, then racism, then police brutality, then toxic relationships. If you want to just remember alphabetically from B, C, D, R, P, then T, if it make it easier for you. But racism is in the middle. And as a mother of 3 black sons, what I decided to do was not have any conversation with my kids about how to comport themselves, because it doesn't matter. And because their skin is their crime. Their skin color is their crime. These 3 handsome boys, innocent boys, well-behaved young men, when they step outside my house, all of a sudden somebody sees a threat. Well, that's not my problem. I do not have a problem with that, because it's your problem if you see them as that. And case in point, the baby and his big brother, went running in May of this year in the neighborhood where they grew up, where he went to elementary school and he went to high school. Now he's in graduate school now, and he's a sophomore in high school, but he went to elementary school in this neighborhood. And then they went running, and then someone calls the police on them. So the police guy literally follows them all the way to my house. They had headphones on, exercise clothes on, running gear. I mean, it's like, while my baby was like, took it in stride, his younger, his big brother did not. He was extremely traumatized. Very, like he did not go running until he left back for college. He didn't go back outside the house. You should not leave. This is wrong. This is, how do you explain this to your own child? Like, what do you want me to do? So I did what I knew how to do best. I blogged about it. And then someone said, this will make a good book. And I was like, you're right. So I wrote a book about it. I mean, it's like, we need to do what we need to do to start seeing each other as human. So my favorite quote is, we should all first be humanists. If you see me as a human, that my melanin and my skin is not something negative or makes me different somehow, because my heart has four chambers, your heart has four chambers. My eyeballs have two chambers, your eyeball has two chambers. You know, it's like, I have a vajayjay, you have a vajayjay. Like, there's nothing there that's different between the two of us. My hair grows up, your hair grows down, but we all got hair. Like, this is just so irrelevant. And so much energy and pressure and lives are being lost in America. America is on fire right now because of this. Yesterday, they clocked 100 days of straight protests. 100 days, straight protests. The best thing about that is what I said in my book, How to Teach Your Children About Racism. I saw pictures of white kids, white adults, white young adults forming a human chain, linking their bodies together to protect the black. So I know that there's faith, I mean, there's hope for us, not by our might, because we have failed. Our generation has failed. The next generation, maybe. I saw them form human body armor against the police. This is even vicarious trauma on its own, on the white kids who are doing this. Talk less of the black kids who they have to do this to protect them. I mean, it's just like, thank God for that, but it's unnecessary, highly unnecessary. 400 years of generations of racism and just treating the black man as a piece of metal, scrap metal, you could just ride over and just keep going. Oh, what was that? Oh, nothing. You chase somebody down and shoot him for running in your neighborhood. We're only having this conversation today because the policeman didn't choose to stop my boys or say something to them. I don't know how that would have ended. Mm-hmm. And just last Saturday, while he was putting his stuff in his car, somebody just came and said, you know what? You need to move your shit, the guy said to him. And my son was like, what? And next thing he takes the phone and says, an African-American male, something, something, something. You know, you don't call 911 and the word African-American male in the same sentence and not expect a death sentence. Mm-hmm. If my son was there two more minutes, the Boston police could have mowed him down and then ask questions later or call me or plant something and say, oh, he was found with a bag of drugs. I don't know. So it is beyond a cry for stop it, like for real. The Karens and the whoever else out there, I don't know what the male version of Karen is. Y'all need to just check yourself and see, does it really make sense calling the police on a child who's selling water for fundraiser in your neighborhood? That is the lowest level of low self-esteem, and I don't know what you have that's bothering you to that point that you want a child. Oh, God.
Yeah, I don't. That's always startling to me too. Is when it's actually at kids, you know, just looking at faces and pictures. I mean, I'm rubbing my head right now because it makes my body hurt too. To sit there and again be able to look at other children. I mean, children in general. I mean, we're talking about teen suicide, right? I mean, we're going to bring this back home here. We're talking about kids being treated in ways that is just deplorable. And then when you bring in the racism to this. I it blows my mind that there are people that hurt, fearful, broken, whatever their pathology is running through their head. And today, I mean, you and I both know that, like, calling the cops and reporting a quote unquote crime against a black person is dangerous. And you only do it because you're being fucking spiteful And you're hoping for something to happen. I mean, seriously.
Yes.
I mean,
and you would not have, you know what I say now? I say, I hope you get COVID. That's for me right now, because it's 2020. I can't think of anything worse to offer you for free except COVID. Like, at this point, it makes no sense, because my two sons were literally exercising. Mm-hmm. Everybody in the neighborhood is exercising their right to run around the neighborhood. One of them is 22. He's a graduate from Stanford with awards and honors. So I'm not talking about just a random Black kid. I'm talking about my kid, my son, a good person, an activist in his own right. This is uncalled for. And yet tonight, today, somebody somewhere feels, yes, I've called the police on their asses. Really? What is wrong with you? How much pain are you in? Toothache or your big toe hurts or something, ingrown toenail, something that makes you feel like this is your outlet. Mm-hmm. I'm talking to you. You know yourself. You know your family members who do this nonsense. Unacceptable. And the worst thing is, don't let me see you at church on Sunday. Going to kneel on the... Don't let me see you doing, holding the Bible. Do you know what the Bible is? Do you know what it stands for? You're wrong, and you know it. And you know it. And yes, it is Suicide Awareness Month. We might as well talk about it. But you know, I got something for you, Amy. Most people don't know this, but African American kids age 5 through 12 are twice as likely as their white counterparts to die by suicide. I wonder why.
I wonder why.
I freaking wonder why. The world is so, it's ferocious to them. It's like, you know what? I'm going to help you out. Don't fire me. I quit. Kind of thing. Like, mm-hmm. I got it. I'll help you kill myself. So you don't have to worry about calling the police on me for just being who I am. So it definitely calls for, I don't know, the whole world to go on a hunger strike or something. So some people will get it, that your own fragility or your thin skin or your privilege is bullshit, because ultimately you can't take it outside of Mother Earth. Mm-hmm. It's not going to take you to heaven. You're not going to do anything. You're not going to be a better person, because you're in such a weird place someone that wants to cause somebody else harm. This is not good for you. You know, the funny thing about toxic masculinity, this is an example. Toxic masculinity or suicide. So I don't know what Karen is, the female version of toxic masculinity. Mm-hmm. You think you think everything, you know, you deserve to reap where you haven't sown and scatter somebody else's bed that made. Well, you can't sleep well. De la noche. And so it's important that we talk about this, because nobody wants to talk about it. Cover it all you want. It's still a reality. So Amy, I have to give you kudos. As a white ally, and I'm going to call you that because I think you are, for even venturing where many will not, i.e. put a Black female African immigrant on your show to talk about this real stuff. You can talk about all the frou-frou stuff you want. I'm not a celebrity. I'm a mom who just cares about her kids and other people's kids. As you know, I don't know if you saw the video where I pulled over, made a U-turn for that boy. Mm-hmm. And I stayed there until the police let him go. And they didn't find anything. We're not going to be just talkers. We must be doers. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I'm not going to be talking about this. I'm going to do this. I could have gotten shot that day. I could have gotten killed. But by the grace of God, I wasn't. And so the hashtag stay with my son has just gone viral now because of that. Well, you know what? Everyone should be staying with my son, and my son, as in figuratively speaking, everybody's mm-hmm. son should take a village to save our kids. And if that boy were white, I don't even know that I would have pulled over, but I also know that he would have probably not been potentially killed. You know what I mean? Like, so mm-hmm. I have to be selective. If it's a Black boy, I'll pull over, because the studies have shown that they're the ones that get killed. So, and I don't know, on our way home, my eldest was like, well, I wonder what would have happened if we hadn't pulled over. We're like, yeah, we wonder what would have happened. We will never know. But the policeman was nice to me. He smiled the whole time. He pulled up to me and spoke something to me. I told him about my book. He said he was going to go get it. So the point I'm trying to make is, maybe he did pull him over for he said it was speeding. I remember that, because the boy said it was speeding. But yes, there's a speeding, and then there's a speeding that ends in a death, a homicide, really, because that's what it is. So it's not quite, and you don't know which one is going to be one. And so I was acting from a spinal level that day. I was like, I'm doing this. Like, I didn't even think about anything. I just said, I'm doing this. And I did. And I'm so proud of myself. And I don't know that I'm a martyr or I'm an angel or I'm better than anybody. I just did something that I want other mothers to do. You know, and actually the person that did it first was a white female. She did it, and then a friend of mine shared the video with me. And I was like, what the heck? So I found her on Facebook. I was like, girl, I love you so much. And then she used that hashtag. I was like, I'm about to blow up your hashtag, girl. She was like, do it. I'm like, yeah. This was like a month before this happened. I had no idea it was going to happen. The power of spoken word, right? Mm-hmm. So, but needless to say, I'm just thankful that, you know, you gave me the platform. I know we didn't get any of your questions the way you wanted it to be gotten, but don't give me a microphone, man.
Use it. That's what it's supposed to be there for. That's your gift, right?
Yeah.
That's what you're supposed to do. So the hashtag is stand with my son.
Stay with my son.
Okay.
Stay with my son. Yes.
All right. So we're going to make sure that we'll get that included too. And the principle is everyone is someone's son.
Yes.
So that's what it takes to do that. I love it.
Yeah. Everyone should stay with, if you see, and of course this is a special plea. Like this book says, a letter from a black mother to white parents. So specifically I want white parents to stay with my son, like she did, that lady did. Mm-hmm. I want them to stay with my son, figuratively speaking.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I get it. It's powerful. And you don't have to apologize. This is a great conversation all across the board. And I opened that up for you because I knew you'd have something to say that everybody needs to hear. And I appreciate that.
I appreciate it too. And I'm actually glad that it happened now and not last year, because with the context of some of the stuff we talked about today, wouldn't have happened. So you're right. Everything happens when it was meant to happen.
Yep. No, I believe it. I got goosebumps thinking about it. So I go with the flow here. What are some things then for you that you would like to see that change in the U.S. in order to end deaths of teenagers by suicide? I mean, I know it's hard to distill those down into a top five list, but I know that this is something you're passionate about, you care about. You've said a lot of really great things that are really, that we need to be mindful of. Accountability, I think of as one thing as a parent. I see, because sometimes you see where a family, and again, not judging. I mean, this is painful. I mean, I can't even imagine being a parent and having my child end their life, you know, in a backyard barbecue on a 4th of July in front of everybody. Like, that is a horrifying thought. Where and what do families need to do? What do parents need to do then that's different than what we've been doing that you think will actually drastically change the tides of children and teenagers killing themselves?
I think the first thing is if your child picks you, that's a blessing. If your child picks you to tell you, I want you to believe them the first time. That's it. Children don't, going back to the things that we've talked about that are possible causes of trauma in a child. A child says they are being bullied. A child says they are being molested, whether it's their priest, whether it's their uncle, whether it's their, you know, best friends, brothers, mothers, cousins, sisters, friend, I don't care. Believe them the first time. I do not know any child that's going to make up stuff like that. That's just not possible. Okay, believe them the first time. And this is the only time I recommend you be a helicopter parent. Be all about that, okay? But I came up with an acronym, the word TALK, T-A-L-K, because the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, one of their hashtags is TALK Saves Lives. The other one is Silence Kills. But I came up with an acronym for the word TALK. So T stands for tuning in to the right radio frequency of your child, AKA know your kid, know when their moods change, like you said, know when they become irritable or restless. Know that on your own as their parent. The second thing is for ask the right questions. And the top three questions to ask are, what's happening or what happened? Not why. Why is judgmental? Why do you do that? Why do you do this? Now, what happened that led you to do this? You're opening up conversation because it's like, oh, what's happening? Okay, so it's a different, it might sound like it's the same to you, but it's not. Mm-hmm. If you're hurting and somebody asks you why you want to kill yourself, you're going to say, because I want to die. They say, that's it. If you say, what happened? Well, how much time you got? You see that? Mm-hmm. Oh my God, thank you. I can't believe you actually noticed that. Yes, I did, or whatever. So it makes the child realize that maybe you actually care about them. And if you're going to ask questions, then you must listen. So L is for lean in, close the space, lead from the heart, right? And listen. And listen to everything they have to say. And then K is for keeping communication lines wide open as you get them effective help. And I use effective because, again, going back to medications, that's not effective. We've seen that suicide rates are going up in spite of medications. So effective help for me with suicidal patients is not medication. It's a combination of finding out what's going on with the child, the environment, the toxicity, right? And then acting based on the child needs medication, go for it. My seven-year-old had ADD, so they're impulsive, right? They will do it before they think about it. But I brought that at the end because I want people to not say, she said ADD, no. This is my first time talking about ADD. But you and I know that, or maybe you don't, but the reason ACE's study was done was because Dr. Nadine Burke was diagnosing too much ADD. She was like, wait, why are these kids coming up with ADD? What's going on? They found out that it was trauma that was causing them to act out. So maybe my child did not have ADD. Mm-hmm. We don't know for sure because his father was not in the picture. So he was already traumatized that way. It's an absent father picture. And then the replacement father was teasing his own biologic father. Trigger. So you see that? And so TALK will set the ball rolling because that includes me as a provider, as a doctor, right? For the help part. But see, there's five things in there. Four of them is you. Mm-hmm. Yep. Four of them is you. And then the fifth one is me or the counselor or the therapist or whatever. Because four out of five teenagers, and that's actually the catch there. Four out of five teenagers or teenagers who attempt suicide will leave a sign. Four out of five. So in the talk, four out of the five things in talk are you, the parent. So that'll help you remember that. Mm-hmm. And the signs, because I know you want to know, mm-hmm. are number one, in a teenager, suicidal behavior can actually mimic regular teenage behavior. They have restlessness, they have recklessness, they have irritability, they have mood changes, right? Any teenager. Mm-hmm. But yep. If a child is normally an introvert, and for the past 2 weeks, they are just extremely extroverted, check it. They've made up their minds, okay? Mm-hmm. Or vice versa. If a child is giving away their prized possessions, no, I want you to have it. But you love it. Yeah, I know. I just want you to have it. Why? Yeah, I just want you to have it. If a child is talking or writing or asking questions about death, kids don't do that. Never. Check it. Case in point, Ms. Alexander Valoras, 17-year-old from, I don't know, Pennsylvania or something. She was the student body president, robotics whiz, straight A student, exemplary kid, all around American teenager. One night, she made her bed and walked out of the house and jumped off an embankment. After it happened, of course, to her death, her mother found a 200-page journal with nothing but self-loathing words. You're a failure. You should die. I hate you. This is a child that, so four out of five is what I said, because there's a one for the Alexanders out there. Or are there? If mom had read her journal a week before, and mm-hmm. so sometimes when you say you're giving your child space, you don't want to go in their rooms. I don't know how I feel about that. My son's rooms are pretty wide open and I'm not invading their privacy, but I'll go and lay on their bed and let's just talk about how your day is going.com. When you close that space and you're available for them, they will come to you if you're open to them. You know what I mean? So you're closing to open, right? Mm-hmm. So things like that. And of course, there are many more. There's mood change, there's depression. But depression is a symptom. And that's what I want people to hear me. It's not the leading cause. Everything I said to you will make me depressed if that happened to me.
Right.
But don't treat my depression. Ask, why did last year she was just the happiest girl? Something happened. Just because she doesn't want to tell you doesn't change that. And that's what I want. That's how I want parents to approach that topic. So the top three symptoms, asking questions. Then I think I said, did I say asking questions, talking or writing about it? That's number one. Feelings of guilt or shame or hopelessness or worthlessness. Yeah. And mm-hmm. then recklessness with activities, loss of interest in activities they once enjoyed, like my patient did, and giving away their prized possessions. You can't go wrong with those three. Mm-hmm. And in a class. Yeah.
Yeah. And to treat those very seriously when those happen.
And
yeah.
And to don't ever, like I said, believe them. That's why I started by saying, believe them first. Mm-hmm. Before I unleashed what they'll be doing, you need to believe. Because mm-hmm. after the fact, it's too late. You can cry all you want at that point. This is a mother of a child who was suicidal. A person who has been suicidal. It won't bring the child back. So before we get to that point, we need to act all kinds of ways. I'd rather you call me and tell me, and then I figure out that nothing really is going on, than don't call me, and then it's really something that's going on.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. So, speaking of that, then how can people find you? So as we get through the end of this and people are like, I need to talk to Dr. Lula. I need her in my life.
So, yes, ma'am. My number is area code 802-768-1180. And yes, that is my cell phone number. Literally rings on this baby right here. Because I have what we call a direct primary care practice whereby the patients have direct access to me because of their situation. I don't have a front office. I don't have a back office. It's me, myself, and I. For obvious reasons.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So. Yep. And we'll have links to your website, which is tinalife.com, which also has other links to find you on social because you have an Instagram account. You have a YouTube channel that has tons of videos educating parents about teen suicide and facts and figures and things that they need to know so we can get more in depth or somebody can get more in depth with that. Obviously, you're active on social media, so you can be found there. And sometime soon, your TED Talk will be published so that everybody Yay! Will get a chance to actually see you on there.
Yes.
So.
Beyond excited about that. Beyond excited about that. Yes.
Absolutely. Yes. Well, it has been a pleasure. I mean, more than a pleasure, actually, to be able to connect with you today and to have this conversation. I appreciate you so much and everything that you do. And you're definitely your outspoken, bold nature is something that I always admire in people and especially in women, you know, ready to come forward and to speak their truth and to stand in their truth. And you're Amen. Definitely one of those people there. So thank you for everything that you've been doing and for being on the show with me today.
Amen. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to One Broken Mom. You can find podcast notes on my website at amiquiracone.com. And there I'll provide all links to all of the resources that we mentioned on the episode. Also, if you have any questions, comments, or ideas for other episodes, feel free to send me an email. And if you are interested in sponsoring the show, I'd love to have you be a part of the team. Finally, if you like what you hear, please share the podcast and leave a review so that others can find it. We are all here to get better together. I am the host, Ami Quirconi, and as always, I am super grateful to have you as a listener. Until next time, have a great day.